Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm Nina Xiang in Beijing. Don't know what it's like where you are, but Beijing is getting cooler every day. It does feel like fall has finally arrived. And I was under the weather for a while, but hope all of you are healthy and busy and content with life. And always remember one thing that won't change, that China Money Podcast will always be bringing you the latest insights and analysis on China. So let me introduce today's guest, Tainoch Kausler, research analyst at Singapore-based 3 Degrees Asset Management. Welcome to the podcast, Tainoch.
Thank you.
So Tainoch, or he would rather be called TK, it's much easier for me to say. TK is talking to me on the phone from Singapore today. Your firm, 3 Degrees Asset Management, has total asset under management about $400 million, and you have 3 hedge funds. Is that why it's called 3 Degrees?
No, it's not called 3 Degrees because of that. The reason it's called 3 Degrees is because we have an underlying philosophy that all relationships are just 3 degrees of separation away from you. So we relationships is a key philosophy, and that's the name 3 Degrees. And in addition, we invest in 3 degrees north and south of the equator. So in Asia. So that's the reasons why our firm is called 3 Degrees.
Okay, interesting. You have 1 distressed debt fund and also a distressed real estate fund and another performing debt fund.
Yeah, that's right. We were known in Asia as distressed debt specialists, and we have an Asian debt fund that has been around for a while. We have a distressed real estate hedge fund, and now in January last year, we launched a performing debt hedge fund.
And you do a lot of research on the debt market. So let's focus on the bond market today. First, let's look at the dim sum bond market. The dim sum bond market is called dim sum bond market. It's just a very interesting nickname for the offshore RMB-denominated bond market in Hong Kong. Since its establishment, it has been a darling for investors. But just this past week, we heard the unthinkable news of an institution actually postponing its pretty large dim sum bond deal. Its Malaysian government investment arm, Khazanah National, is postponing its 500 million yuan bond deal. Okay, TK, can you first maybe take a step back, give us a little bit overview of some recent dim sum bond market developments, and then tell investors how should they think about this one single incidents.
Okay, sounds good. Before I start, I'll just make a disclaimer that the views I'm expressing are my own and don't necessarily reflect the views of my firm. And talking about the dim sum bond market, see, from a macro point of view, the dim sum bond market is really important from China. If somebody has been following the news recently, the top brass in China announced that they plan to make the yuan fully convertible by 2015. That's just 3 years away, 3.5 years away from us. And the dim sum bond market is a very important tool using which they can do that. This market started about 1 year ago, and people at the moment use it more as a currency appreciation play than a credit play. The RMB is largely expected to appreciate, and that's why people have been biting this market. Multinational firms like Caterpillar, McDonald's, I think Yum Brands came last week, Mitsubishi, all these, VGB Bank of Russia, All these firms have tapped the dim sum bond markets and have done pretty well in terms of investor interest.
And all those companies have been able to secure financing at a very favorable rate.
At a very favorable rate, and like they were subscribed pretty favorably. So like the books were 2 or 3 times oversubscribed. So all of these were good deals. And a few Chinese companies followed suit, and you had a lot of Chinese companies which probably didn't go to the high-yield market for the reason you mentioned and came to the dim sum bond market to raise cash. Right now, there are 2 trends in this market. I'll come back to the events of the last week in a bit. But right now, before last week, there were 2 trends in this market. You had the multinationals issuing cheap debt because they could do so, and you had the companies from China, the companies from mainland China, who were having a problem even raising money in this market. The reason being because people are generally scared about a lot of companies from China after China Forestry and China Forest and want a premium to invest in these companies. A lot of these companies which have come to the dim sum bond market have no track record, are relatively new, people don't know much about them, it's difficult to speak to the IR, And now the market wants a premium for taking this kind of a credit risk. Whereas all these multinationals, like I think there was a company called Air Liquide from France, you had Volkswagen some months ago, they had absolutely no problem issuing this in some bond markets. In some bonds, sorry. So like there were two divergent trends for mainland Chinese companies and for international companies. Coming to what happened last week, I think it's pretty interesting because people are by and large misreading what happened in the market last week. The yuan didn't depreciate. It was the dollar which appreciated last week because of the flight to safety. So I won't be writing an obituary for Dinsum bonds just yet. If somebody has been following the macroeconomic events in China, they'll realize that China has been on a rate tightening cycle for the last few, in fact, for the last 12 months or so. And with the export growth slowing down, they probably will not be able to do that pretty soon. I'm not saying that they'll lower their interest rates, but probably they won't be able to raise them any further. And in this environment, currency appreciation is the only tool they have to counter inflation in the country. So I'm pretty bullish on a yuan appreciation in the short to medium term. When I say short to medium term, I'm talking about 6 to 18 months. So the Dinsum bond markets are definitely here to stay. Plus, the China, as I mentioned at the beginning of my talk, the market is really important for China. They really need to open this market if they have to internationalize the RMB. Because, you know, when investors want to invest in a currency, they require some kind of a market. They require a developed equity market. They require a developed bond market. They need instruments to invest. And the Dinsum bond gives them one such instrument. So I'm very sure Chinese authorities won't let anything happen to this market. This market is going to be big in the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay, so you think the yuan appreciation is still going to continue? Last week, what happened, the non-deliverable forward contracts indicating actually the RMB is going to depreciate against the dollar. It's just a one incident, and that is not going to be sustainable. It's not going to continue.
See, the world is a very funny place because of the flight quality. People are looking at instruments which they consider safe. So even though the U.S. got downgraded last month, they still consider U.S. treasuries and U.S. dollar as a safe haven. And what happened last week was just a manifestation of that when people and investors invested in the U.S. dollar, and that's the reason the dollar appreciated. So as I said, it's not an RMB depreciation, it's more of a U.S. dollar appreciation. And going forward, this won't happen unless you have some big event like one of the Euro sovereigns going down. Otherwise, by and large, the stage is set for a yuan appreciation. What makes me even more bullish is that the Chinese government will now have to use it as a tool to counter inflation in the country. Because, as you know, the export outlook for Chinese companies has gone down because the U.S. won't be going so fast. Europe is also teetering on a brink of recession. If the country has to protect the export sector, if the country has to protect jobs in the export sector, they can't raise interest rates any further. This leaves only one option, which is appreciation of the yuan. And China has a current account surplus. Unlike India, China has the room to appreciate its currency. If you look at the Indian rupee got battered last week. And but China has the room to appreciate the RMB, and I'm sure they're going to use this tool pretty soon.
But do you think because of this incident that happened last week, that means for issuers, they might have to pay a little bit more because investors are not coming in for a short bet of RMB appreciation, and they might demand some credit premiums?
Definitely. I think the market for Dinsum bonds is not conducive right now because of the events which happened last week. And I think Khazana was right in postponing the bond offering. But this should change. This should change in the next few months. And the market will be right again. And these issuers can come back and raise debt. But within the Dinsum bond market, I am still worried about the mainland Chinese companies, their prospects of raising debt. But I'm definitely not worried for somebody like Khazana or somebody like a AAA-rated multinational firm who has operations in China. I'm not worried about them.
What the Chinese companies need to do in order to make their dim sum bond deals more successful?
Well, for first, we definitely don't need any more scandals coming out of China for the next few months. That's the first. If you look at the yields on the Chinese real estate, they have gone through the roof. And no one is looking at them at this point in time because people are scared. And the non-real estate companies, they used to be pretty popular with investors during the first half of this year. And as a result, a lot of deals were done carelessly. And some of these companies have either defaulted or some of these companies have corporate governance issues. And if you follow the news carefully, there are a lot of corporate governance issues and scandals at a few Chinese companies, and that's scaring the investors away. I'm not saying China's the only country where you're having this issue. India has its fair share of scandals as well. But at the moment, investors are scared of high yield. And Chinese companies, they should pray that for the next few months, there shouldn't be any other scandal at a Chinese company.
Well, let's see if that's possible. another big news that happened in the dim sum bond market is that the Indian government has agreed for the first time recently to allow Indian companies to raise as much as $1 billion worth of dim sum bonds. Do you think is that just the beginning of something huge?
Yeah, it is. I'll give you a bit of background. As I just said, Chinese companies aren't the only ones who have scandals or who have corporate governance issues. Indian companies have their share of issues as well. And the problem with India is Indian companies issued something known as an FCCB, Foreign Currency Convertible Bonds. These are basically convertible bonds which they issued in 2007-2008 when there was a bull market, just before the Lehman crisis. And a lot of Indian companies came to the market, they issued. The underlying assumption was that the Indian stock market is rising pretty fast. And by the time these bonds mature, they will be well in the money and most investors will convert to equity. Unfortunately, the 2008 financial crisis happened. And as of now, a lot of these bonds are out of the money. And because of global economic crisis, most of the companies don't have the cash to pay back these bonds. And refinancing, as everywhere in the world, is tough in India these days. So the underlying rationale of issuing an Indian dim sum bonds is to enable these Indian companies to raise dim sum bonds to repay these FCCBs. Otherwise, there will be mass defaults in Indian FCCB market as well. And yes, I think it's a good instrument. And I think a lot of investors, I mean, Indian government was smart here. Of the BRIC countries, the BRIC team is still alive and kicking. An instrument which gives you exposure to a Chinese currency and an Indian company, that's something which should macroeconomically do well because investors are looking at Asia for the next wave of growth. So yes, I think this market will do well. A lot of Indian companies, in fact, this will save a lot of Indian companies from going red in the face and defaulting. It will help the Indian FCCB market, and it will investors will have a new tool to invest. So yes, I'm bullish on this market. I just hope no Indian company again defaults or does something, issues with some bonds and then defaults on it. Otherwise, you know, when you have a developed bond market, you have the odd default and people move on. Mm-hmm. But when you have a nascent market, a market which is growing, which has just a handful of issuers, and one of them defaults, the confidence in the market tanks. And it can actually kill something which is really promising. And that's the reason I'm hoping that no company, be it Chinese company, be it an Indian company, or be it some other company, which has issued a dim sum bond, has any corporate governance issue or a scandal in the next few years at least.
We understand that you're bullish on the dim sum market as a whole. And just exactly how bullish are you? For example, if we just look at the total volume of dim sum bonds issued this year, it's a record of 119 billion yuan of dim sum bonds issued so far this year. What's your thinking on how big it can grow to in this year or next year?
See, a lot depends on how the events in the world are, how the global economy, how Europe handles this house is really very important for me. I'm more worried about Europe right now than I'm worried about the US. But assuming that there are no sovereign defaults in the next 6 to 8 months, I think this market can go viral. And talking about the returns, see, dim sum bonds for the short term to the medium term will be more of a currency play than a bond play. So the yields on the bonds won't be so much. They'll be mid single digits, 6%, max 7%. They won't be like 12-13% of yields on them. But I think investors in this environment will take it because they want something safe, where they can preserve the capital and have some kind of assured returns. So I think this market has a lot of potential. Investors, the ones I have met at least, the ones I've spoken to, and me personally, are definitely bullish on this market. This figure of 119 billion can even double in the next 12 months, if nothing happens to start up. That's a footnote I add.
And I remember last time we talked about dim sum bond market, you were concerned about one aspect of this market, which is how companies can repatriate those money raised in Hong Kong offshore back to mainland China onshore. With recently we had some announcement about policy initiative to make that process easier. So are you still very much concerned about that?
No, I'm not. As I just said, the dim sum bond market is important for China. Macroeconomically, it's really important for China. And I was kind of expecting this announcement to happen because China will do everything in its power to make sure that this market grows and grows well. So I'm honest, from a regulatory standpoint, I'm not worried. I'm sure the regulators are well aware of the issues investors have and are doing everything in their power to address them.
Great. Thank you so much, TK. And now it's time for our favorite game, Long Short.
Long Short.
The RMB.
Long.
Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke.
Can I say neutral?
Sure. Neutral?
Yeah, then I'll be neutral on it.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's a political issue. Bernanke doesn't have the kind of power people think he has. There's a lot of things which go behind the scenes. So I'll say neutral.
Okay. The euro?
Short.
President Obama's re-election?
Again, neutral. I think there are a lot of moving parts, and it's difficult to comment at this point of time. All depends on how stuck up the Republicans are.
Okay. Hong Kong's IPO market?
Definitely long.
Okay. Inflation in China?
I think it'll come down. I expect it to come down now.
Short?
Yeah, so short, yeah.
A peaceful solution in the South China Sea dispute?
Oh, no. That's a big risk this region has. Definitely short.
Okay. Temasek's near-term investment performance?
Probably neutral short.
India establishing her own sovereign wealth fund?
Establishing their own sovereign wealth fund long. Running it well short.
Okay. Japan's economy.
Honestly, probably neutral. Again, there are a lot of things which are uncertain, so neutral.
Yahoo.
Yahoo, short. Right now, short. Definitely short.
Very decisive short. Russia's future president, Putin.
Long.
Sebastian Vettel winning the Singapore's F1 race.
Short.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome back. I'm continuing to talk to Tanuj Kosler, analyst at 3Degrees Asset Management in Singapore. Next, we're going to discuss distressed debt investment. But before we go into that topic, I just want to give all of our listeners a reminder about our listeners' lucky draw that's still going on. You can simply go to our iTunes page and give us a rating and leave us a comment. And you can have the chance to win a beautiful tablet, computer. All right, so TK, we're going to focus on distressed debt investment in the second part of the program. Tell us first a little bit about which region or which country do you mostly focus on?
See, as a fund, we focus on the whole of Asia, so there's no one country which is a darling. It's all of them, be it India, China, Indonesia, Philippines. But I can tell you about the trends in distressed debt in the next 2 to 3 years. Some things which we'll probably see emerging after the next 2 to 3 years. And the two countries I pick out here would be India and China. And I'll give reasons for it. Starting with China, as I said at the beginning of this program, about 100 billion of debt was issued by Chinese companies, I think, in the last 12 to 18 months. And most of the deals got done. And a lot of companies which didn't have a track record, they were first-timers, came to the market and managed to raise cash. And the reason was because there was investor appetite. Investors from the West were looking at emerging market debt as a place to park their cash. There was a China growth story going through. There were not many options apart from Asia to park your cash. So these deals got done, and the investment bankers and these companies were alive to the investor sentiment in the West. and on people who are looking for higher returns, and they tap this market. I suspect that a lot of these companies shall have issues in the next 12 to 18 months, and the whole market can actually go down by a lot. And then we'll have this entire distress test cycle playing itself again in China. It won't be easy. The bankruptcy laws in China aren't the most investor-friendly. It's difficult to liquidate, but people who have the connections and funds who have the contacts and have the expertise stand to gain a lot.
Okay, TK, let me ask you a follow-up question before you go into India. You have explained why you think there will be plenty of distressed corporate debt in China available, but what are the key things you think will make investors who invest in distressed debt be successful in turning around, restructuring, and making actually a profit?
See, if the bankruptcy laws and investor protection in China improves in the next 2 years, which I expect it should, as China plans to open up its markets, the financial markets. So I think that is something which will boost my confidence as an investor in the distressed debt market in China. So that's definitely one thing. And of course, in China, relationships and local contacts are very important. I mean, I can hardly emphasize this. Local expertise, connections in China, in fact, the whole of Asia really work. In Asia, it's all relationships matter.
And normally in a distressed debt investment, you have a restructuring to restructure a company. Do you expect firms who invest in China's distressed debt goes through the same process, or you rather see it more just simply liquidating the business and see if there is extra dollars on the table?
Honestly, it can be both. It depends how China is doing 2 years down the line. If China is growing thick and fast, then probably I suspect they'll try to restructure the companies. If there's a bubble in China, some people claim, and I'm not one of them, then the investors would be looking to liquidate. So it totally depends how the macroeconomic conditions in China and the world are 2 years down the line. Investors, distressed investors, exercise both these options, and a host of factors govern which option they exercise.
Okay, great. So you want to go into India and talk about why Indian distressed debt opportunities will also be very attractive?
Yeah, I mean, India's bankruptcy laws are really, really poor at the moment, and there are hardly any investor protection, especially for foreign investors. And as I just said, a lot of foreign currency convertible bonds, FCCBs, are maturing in the next 12 to 18 months. The ones which are not able to refinance, the ones which are not able to generate enough cash from their internal accruals to pay back the investors, would have no choice but to default. Then again, you'd have the distressed debt market price. India has not had a distressed debt market. It's all been, whatever is being done has been done internally, because a lot of local companies, local banks have held the debts. But I think that's changing. For the first time in the country's history, a sizable amount of corporate debt is held by foreign funds and foreigners. And there's a possibility of a distressed debt fund doing well in India. Just again, like China, you need relationships and you need better laws.
Okay. Lastly, let's touch on quickly on China's economy. We learned last week that preliminary PMI in China last month showed a contraction for the first time. What do you see as the biggest challenge for China's economy right now?
Honestly, the PMI doesn't so much. I mean, it was kind of expected, especially after the rate tightening cycle that China has been on. So, you know, when you try to balance inflation and you have to balance the other macroeconomic forces, it's you win some and you lose some. So I'm not very worried about the PMI. What I'm more worried about China is, apart from the corporate governance issues at the companies, I'm quite worried about the income disparity in China. People talk about the growth in China, the demand in China, the domestic demand. The reality is that there are a lot of poor people in China and there are a lot of super rich people in China. And the middle class isn't as developed as India or, say, even the US for that matter. And that's something which worries me. So the growth in China right now is being driven by the ultra-rich, the super rich people in China, but there are a lot of poor people. And these poor people know about what's happened in the Middle East. They know about Egypt, they know about Libya, and they know about Tunisia. And I believe there's a lot of unrest among these people. And I'm at the media censorship to this. And I'm just worried about the social unrest problem in China. That's my biggest concern at the moment.
And is China's income disparity larger than India's?
Maybe comparable, but India definitely has a bigger and a more developed middle class, which is driving the domestic consumption boom in India.
How do you compare a country's middle class population to another? Because each country might have a different criteria for what qualify as middle income.
True, but you compare them by the savings rate and by the consumption patterns of a country, by the demographics of a country. Like India has 55% of the population below 25 years of age. China has a one-child policy, and if this continues, you'll have more old people and less working class. So if you look at the demographics, it's clear that China needs to change this.
So you're quite concerned about China's social stability.
Definitely, and the fact still remains, like, if you've been following news in India, there have been protests, but there hasn't been any widespread violence as such, because being a democracy, the media is free, the people are free, you can freely criticize the government, all that has happened in India. Whereas in China, there are strict laws, and I'm just worried that going forward, how effectively the government can control the social unrest problem in China. That's something which bothers a lot of investors, especially after seeing what's happened in Egypt and what's happened in Tunisia. And I'm sure the Chinese government is aware of this, and they're trying. I mean, you had a wage increase in China for the last 12 to 18 months. And the reason was that the government was trying to put more money in the pockets of the people so that the domestic demand goes up and the people are happier and they're less socialist, less social unrest. But I don't know how sufficient is that, and probably they need to do a bit more.
Well, that's very interesting. And I'd like to end today's program with an extra long, short question for you.
Sure.
Okay. A widespread riot in China or even a total upheaval in the Chinese society within the next 5 years?
Maybe neutral to short. There'll be riots, but I don't expect a social upheaval, but definitely there'll be social unrest, as in other parts of the world. But I am hoping, because Chinese policymakers have been ahead of the curve most of the times, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to contain this problem.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, TK.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to today's China Money podcast. And once again, I want to remind all of you who are listening to please go to our iTunes page and give us a comment and give us a rating. That would really be supportive to us, and we thank you for doing that. See you next week.